Coming up on today's Locked On Dodgers, the Dodgers complete the sweep of the Rockies with a walk-off win, just their second walk-off win of the season. We'll get into that. We'll get into why Cody Bellinger was one of the reasons they did that. We'll talk about Mitch White and his performance, and we'll talk about the Dodgers being at the midpoint of the season, 81 games in. That's what's on tap, so make sure to keep it Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yo, 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 Dodger fans, welcome to Locked On Dodgers. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. Make sure to find and check out Locked On Dodgers on YouTube or wherever you get podcasts simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. And to make it easier on yourself, subscribe in all those places so you can be notified every day and you don't miss a day, because you know we're not going to. If this is your first time listening or watching, I'm Vince Samperio. This is my co-host, Jeff Snyder, and we are Locked On Dodgers. We're both lifelong Dodger fans that have spent some time covering the Dodgers in a variety of ways and continue to cover the Dodgers in different ways. One of those ways being this podcast here. So let's do what we do and talk Dodgers, Jeff.
Yeah, let's talk Dodgers. I was kind of glad yesterday was our 1,000th episode together, and I was kind of glad we didn't realize it until after the fact, because I didn't want a whole navel-gazing episode, you know? But between the Scully Avenue podcast, 138 episodes, and then yesterday was our 900 and whatever, 62nd, whatever adds up to 862nd. I'm sure I can do math. Anyway, it's been 1,000 episodes, and most of them have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, most of them have been fun. This one will be another fun one because the Dodgers won. Like I mentioned, they won via walk-off. It was, as Mookie Betts said, it wasn't pretty, but he got the job done. A little chopper over the mound. A couple Rockies infielders crashed into each other, and that's what allowed their winning run to score. That winning run being Cody Bellinger. And let's start there with Cody Bellinger. He had three hits on the night, ended up scoring both of the Dodger runs. I ended up, you know, using his legs, being able to do so. And one of those, or two of those hits came after, it was a throwing error. It was just kind of a weird thing in general that happened. It bounced over Justin Turner, it bounced over Mitch White. It ended up allowing a run to score. But that, you know, combined with yesterday, Bellinger kind of sliding and missing that one late in the game. One of those things where we talked about how Justin Turner and Chris Taylor didn't bring the offensive struggles to the defensive side. Cody Bellinger, not necessarily defensive struggles, but a couple of defensive mishaps. You can maybe see him wanting to overcompensate at the plate, but he did not do that, especially not on Wednesday, because he had three hits and they were all singles.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, on that play with the throwing error, you know, Bellinger, I wonder if part of him thought that he should have caught the ball. You know, it's a no-hitter going on. And maybe there's some part of him that thinks he should have laid out and dove and caught that ball. You know, it's probably the right call not to do that, because it is a nothing-nothing game. And if that ball gets past you, the run definitely scores. But maybe he tried to make up for not catching it by – I think the throw itself was ill-advised. He probably should have just got the ball into second base, let Bryant take third base. Instead, he makes a throw that gets past JT and gets past Mitch White. But there's definitely – versions of Cody Bellinger we've seen even this year that after that error would have just been trying to make up for everything with one swing out of a shoe, swing for the fences, especially coming up in the bottom of the ninth inning, leading off the bottom of the ninth in a tie game. Like, you know, Cody, he's hit walk-off home runs before, you know, he would love to hit a walk-off home run. So as much as a walk-off home run would have been fun, seeing him hit a single in that situation, I think, is better news for the Dodgers the second half of the season than if Belly had hit a home run. Because we know Belly can occasionally run into a home run. But for him to stay within himself and get a base hit, he's even hit a walk-off home run off Bard, hasn't he? Wasn't that the one that he didn't know where the ball went and it cleared the fence in right field? I think that was off of Bard. So, you know, there you could definitely picture him thinking, I'm hitting a walk-off home run, I'm ending this game right here. But instead, he got a base hit knowing I got Gavin Lux, I got Will Smith, I got Mookie Betts coming up behind me. If I can get on base, I'm fast, I can make things happen, and that's how I can best serve the team instead of swinging for the fences and maybe striking out. And so I was very impressed. I would have been impressed with that those last two at-bats of his anyway, but especially coming after the error that allowed the Rockies to score the run, it was super impressive and seemed like a big development in Cody Bellinger's season to me.
Yeah, I'm also wondering if it had to do with how he did yesterday. He had a few swings, cut it loose swings in the game on Tuesday, ended up with three strikeouts, visibly frustrated after the last strikeout when he swung and missed on a little bit of a hanging off-speed pitch. He tossed the bat into the air. So, and we saw different swings. We didn't really see any cut it loose swings at all from Bellinger today. We saw a lot of those similar to what he did last year in the postseason. Late in the season and the postseason, and why he found success of just poking the ball, finding spots and hitting the ball hard and putting it in play. And we know, you know, we've seen him hit the ball hard a few times this year that didn't end up in positive results, a couple times into double plays or whatever else the case. So, and I know him personally, knowing being a guy that has hit, you know, so many home runs in the season before, being a guy that's been an MVP before, still trying to figure out where he stands now as a player in the big leagues. You know, I'm sure it's a constant struggle between him and his mind and everything else, but it's a matter of, you know, at this point, the Dodgers don't need you to hit 40 home runs. They need you to just play good defense and get on base and do what you did, exactly what you did in this game. So I wonder if he goes more toward that style of play, more toward that style of swing, which does sap his power a little bit. But like you said, and like you mentioned right here, getting on base, you know, Gavin Lux has done that to a certain extent this year. He doesn't really have the power, but he's been able to put the ball, hit the ball hard and get on base. And he's almost hitting 300. And it also feels like he's more comfortable at the plate. And at times has had some cut it loose swings that have either produced home runs or, you know, at least looked nice, even if they didn't produce home runs. So I wonder if that's kind of the way Bellinger is going to go for the rest of the year. I don't know why a random, you know, July 5th game with three strikeouts when he's had multiple games with multiple strikeouts this year would have done that. But if that's the case, I wouldn't be upset about it.
Yeah, well, I did jokingly suggest on Twitter yesterday that maybe the person who last year told Zach McKinstry he might hit better if he looked at the ball when he swung, maybe somebody should give that guy Cody Bellinger's number. So maybe that happened. But, you know, with what I'm hoping, I think my ideal development would be for Cody to spend a week or two with this swing and then find a balance between the two where, you know what, when I'm in ahead in a count, in a 2-0 count, sure, hunt that pitch that you can and swing out of your heels, hunt the home run when you're up in the count. And then, you know, if you don't get it or whatever, then go to this base hit. You know, he'd still hit 25 home runs a year with that approach, just hunting when he's ahead in the count and otherwise just trying. But if he could hit 25 home runs and bat 300 with his speed and his defense, I mean, and right now we'd take even 260 from Bellinger, you know, but he's so talented, so, so good at baseball when he's right. And I would love to see him figure out the offensive side, even if it means fewer home runs, but a better overall offensive player.
Yeah, I think that's what we all can agree on. You know, even if we don't get 2019 Bellinger back, we can get like 75% of that Bellinger. That's still, you know, all borderline all-star with his defense out there in center field. We're going to talk about Mitch White, his performance, and kind of the Dodgers pitching staff as a whole. First, let's talk about Blue Nile, because if you are someone that's looking too surprised or surprised that special someone, you're ready to pop the question, celebrate a milestone moment, whatever it is, you can find jewelry as unique as she is with the modern convenience of online shopping at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com has jewelry experts on hand 24/7, available via phone or chat to help you find a memorable gift at every budget. If you don't know anything about shape, size, clarity, setting, style, all that stuff that maybe most of us don't know about, Blue Nile is there to help you out. And you should probably get some advice from that significant other of what they like as well. But either way, Blue Nile will help you out, and they'll handcraft the perfect engagement ring or milestone moment ring. And right now, you can make your moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com, and Locked On listeners can get $50 off their purchase of $500 or more. This even includes engagement rings, podcast exclusive agreement. Use the code Locked On. That's code Locked On for $50 off $500 or more. Every order is insured, ships free, and arrives in discreet packaging that won't give away what's inside. Shop stress-free and find your forever peace. Go to BlueNile.com. All right, Jeff, we're back, and we're here to talk about Mitch White. Mitch White pitched into the sixth inning, got two outs in that sixth inning, wasn't able to get the third out. Had not allowed a hit through the first five innings, did allow the one hit that ended up being the thing that drove in a run after Bellinger, you know, the misplay and everything else out there and the throw. But just one run, 5 2/3. He's now thrown three straight starts three straight starts in this rotation. But since the month of June, he's made five starts, has gone at least 4 innings in all of them, has gone at least 5 innings in all but two, and has a season ERA down to 3.38. Just one of those guys that has performed in small bursts before, has never really had a defined role, has been, you know, last year optioned 11 times, I think is the number for him, but somebody that's continued to bring stability. And the Dodgers haven't missed a beat. They're still, you know, the leaders in starters ERA in the month of July. You know, it's been a short month, but they have a 1.19 ERA from their starters. And, you know, combine that with Pepio, the Dodgers swept this series with Mitch White and Ryan Pepio throwing two of those games.
Yeah, and Mitch White is a good pitcher. And we as Dodger fans, I think, get spoiled sometimes because the Dodgers have Clayton Kershaw and Walker Buehler and Julio, and the Dodgers are willing to spend, so they are willing to make trades. So they go out and get guys like Max Scherzer and stuff. Mitch White would be a number three or four starter on most teams, probably. He's very good. And I don't know if he's good enough to hold down a spot in the Dodger rotation the rest of the season, but he's definitely providing them a lot of what they need right now with Buehler on the IL and Buehler struggling even before that, with Heaney on the IL and Kershaw has been hurt. Mitch White has been a lifesaver to go out there and give them what he's given them. And, you know, some games are really, really good. Some games are just, because he had three runs in five innings against the Pirates, three runs in 2 1/3 against the Phillies. There's been some that not quite clunkers, but he hasn't been an ace every time out, but a game like this, when he went over 100 pitches, almost got through six innings. If he can be a guy who can throw you 100 pitches and get through six innings and give up three or four runs, Dodgers are going to win most of those games that he does that. And when he decides to give up one hit and zero earned runs, you'd think they definitely win that game, even though it took a walk-off hit to do it this time. But if they can get that from Mitch White every time, they will absolutely take that.
Yeah, and you know, obviously with almost any pitcher, unless you throw a perfect game, there's always somewhat room for improvement. Mitch White had that. He did walk four guys in the month of June. In the 18 innings he threw in June, he walked five guys total. Walked four guys in the five and two thirds last night. But he hasn't really been a guy that walks too many before. So I'm not really concerned about it, especially if when his stuff was so sharp, he was getting strikeouts. You know, he had racked up six strikeouts, I think, one off a season high for this year. We've seen him be a guy that, you know, last year he came in after an opener and ended up finishing the game against the Pirates. So we know he's a guy that can be effective in certain spots, and now he's starting to show himself effective in more than just certain spots, just an effective pitcher overall. I mean, you look at his numbers from last year, we kind of knew that he was an effective pitcher overall, and he's just continued to grow from there. And I mean, in his career, it's not, he hasn't broke 100 innings, but he has a 3.41 ERA, and a 3.41 ERA for somebody that the Dodgers are using as a fifth, sixth slash reliever starter in some cases is more than enough and more than what you may expect, or more than even, like I said, more than what teams have. Mitch White could be a three or four on a lot of teams. He barely cracks the top seven on the Dodgers team, but when he is in there, he's pitching well, pitching effectively, and the Dodgers can benefit from it.
Yeah. And he probably also got a little bit lucky a few times in this game against the Rockies. He had three batted balls that he allowed that were over 100 miles an hour off the bat. One of them was a ground ball. So that one you know, even that had a 480 expected batting average, a hard hit ground ball that's hit 105.8 miles an hour. It's going to find a hole sometimes. Randall Grichuk didn't. And then there were two lineouts that had expected batting averages of 700 and 770. And so, you know, on its merit, he probably wasn't really throwing a no hitter. You know, he probably had gotten a little bit lucky, but you know, every pitcher gets a little bit lucky every game. And the key is to not have too many of those moments and to not get them back to back. And, you know, getting lucky three times in 5 2/3 innings, that's not that bad. Even if those fall in, chances are he doesn't give up any runs, you know? And so there's definitely things to clean up as far as the walks go and maybe limiting that hard contact a little bit. But yeah, like you said, it's not like the Dodgers punted this series, but going in with Pepiot and White, basically they were saying we are relying on our offense and the fact that the Rockies, despite being 4-2 against us this season, are not actually very good. And Pepiot and White both, I think, took major steps forward. And the Rockies, you know, they have some guys who can hit. They're not a terrible offensive team. And so for both Pepiot and White to do that on back-to-back days is pretty impressive and hopefully good for their development.
Yeah. Another thing that was impressive, might be the word, Craig Kimbrell, he pitched the ninth inning when the Dodgers were in a tie game, and he needed just five pitches to get three outs. A little bit of thank you from the Rockies, but also he's putting the ball there, throwing strikes. You know, he can't really analyze too much. We don't know how his command was per se because the Rockies were shooting everything, but we know that he was throwing strikes at the very least. And just good to see a bounce back from him, especially after the way that, you know, came out after he got hit, after he blew the save. Dodger fans down on him again. Dodger fans maybe a little bit worried going into that ninth inning. I wasn't worried about going into the ninth, but once he recorded three outs on five pitches, I thought, oh, they might try to bring him out for the 10th if he gets to the 10th. So I kind of hope he doesn't get to the 10th. And the Dodgers obliged in that regard. But yeah, I mean, Craig Kimbrell, this is what he can be, and hopefully this is what we see more often in the future.
Yeah, my sons and I actually had that conversation during the bottom of the ninth with Kimbrell having thrown five pitches. Would they bring him back out for the 10th? They've done that once earlier this year, and he did allow the Madrid runner to score, and he took the loss in that game. Yeah, and, you know, like you said, he didn't get much swing and miss, if any swing and miss in this game, and two of the three batted balls were hard hit, but they were hard hit grounders. And so they had expected batting averages of 200 and 300. So it's not like they were scorched. They were just, you know, hard hit ground balls. And a lot of the time those, you know, and there, I just said about Grichuk's ground ball that a lot of times a hard hit ground ball will find a way through. That's 108 miles an hour. These were 97.8 and 101.8, and they were -9 and -11 degrees. So they were like hard into the ground. Which is, you know, a lot easier to play. And that's why the expected batting average is so much lower. And then getting CJ Cron to pop up, like, that's the scary one for me. Even though Kimbrell, is he allowed a home run with the Dodgers? He probably, I don't even know, but home runs definitely haven't been his issue. But CJ Cron is scary because that dude has got a ton of power. And in that situation where there's no margin of error, that was scary. And for him to get a pop-up immediately, that was like the big load off my chest in that situation. And yeah, I mean, Kimbrell looked good for his first game back from injury. David Price looked really good, throwing hard still. Maybe he actually has picked up a couple ticks. Yency Almonte maybe struggled a little bit with command a little bit, but looked good overall. And just really a dominant pitching performance. One hit and no earned runs. I think you'll take that every game.
Yeah. Kimbrell's allowed one home run this year, and I don't remember it. So, but other than that, just kind of going off what we talked about yesterday and how the Dodgers were going to get another pitcher and another position player on the roster, we forgot about Caleb Ferguson, who was on the injured list and was eligible to come off. So Caleb Ferguson came off the injured list. And then Zach McKinstry's, while he was placed on the injured list on June 28th, he could have been backdated since he hadn't played since June 23rd. So that was the two moves, Zach McKinstry and Caleb Ferguson on the roster.
Yeah, yeah, we totally forgot Ferguson, which was funny because after the fact, after they announced it, I remember that Eric Steven actually tweeted that that was the probable move. So for some reason, I just brain farted that when we were recording last night. But I think most of the things we said were relatively intelligent, even if we didn't actually end up getting any of the specifics right. You know, our main thesis was that there's a ton of different things they could do. So who knows what they're going to do? And the answer was, we don't know what they're going to do, apparently.
Yeah. Even
David Peralta hit the home run. Dodgers were up 5-2, and Peralta hit a 2-run homer to make it 5-4. That was the one home run that Kimbrel allowed this season.
All right. So, yeah. All right. We're going to talk about Ryan Pepiot in a different way. We're going to talk about the Dodgers being at the midpoint, kind of looking at some numbers, because now it's easy math in order to find some projected numbers for the rest of the year. But first, let's talk about BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. They got all the latest sports developments, league reviews, news, podcasts, betting, esports, scores, all that stuff. With MLB taking the forefront in the month of July, you can check that out. You can check out some tennis stuff, MMA stuff, boxing stuff as well, even golf. Head to betonline.net because it's your number one spot and best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news. Fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events. So head to the website today on your laptop or mobile device and learn more about the trends and learn more about the action. Bet online, where the game starts. All right, Jeff. So before we get into the midpoint, Ryan Pepiot talk. This one's mostly yours. You got a DM asking about some specifics about logistics in terms of players that come and make a spot start and don't necessarily stick around much long after that. Ryan Pepiot was optioned right after the game. And you actually spoke to a pretty well-known source in that, in regards to that specifically. So I'll let you take it away.
Yeah. So I got a DM from Chris Lopez at CHR Lopez 1021 on Twitter. He's a loyal listener. He and I have talked a lot. And he said, I have a question that I'd like to know, and maybe others would too. When a player comes up for a spot start like Pepiot did, where does he stay? It would be nice to get information about what happens, how he gets the call up, the plane, flight, uniform assignment. Where does he stay? Do they get him a car? Dumb stuff, but it might be interesting to hear about. So I thought, who do I know who might know what the situation went like for Ryan Pepiot? And I thought, I'm going to DM Ryan Pepiot and ask him. And so I did, and he got back to me, which was really nice of him. And I actually just copied and pasted Chris's question to him. And Pepiot, one thing that was interesting, he said, most of the time you don't actually know that you're just coming up for a day or two. You can kind of read between the lines and assume it's a spot start, but it's not like they say, hey, you're going to come up and then we're going to send you right back down. It's, you know, you get the call up and that's exciting. And so he said, the phone call comes from Travis Barbary, the Oklahoma City manager, telling him you're getting called up. And he said, that's always exciting. This is his fourth time getting that call. And it's exciting every time. And then just a few minutes after the call from Travis Barbary, he gets a phone call from the Dodgers traveling secretary. And at that point, they figure out, you know, he's already scheduled flights at that point. The traveling secretary has. So tells him, okay, here's what time you need to be at the airport. Here's when your flight is, what airline, all that stuff. And then he also gives him information about a hotel. If he doesn't have a place to stay, which in this case, you know, Pepiot just stays in a hotel. And then obviously if he had stayed in the big leagues for a while, if they said, okay, you're actually going to be here for three or four times through the rotation, he either, you know, gets an apartment or finds a longer term, maybe somebody's stay with one of the other players who has an extra room or whatever. But in this situation, it's just, okay, get a hotel room and a rental car if he needs one, which he generally does in that situation. And so really it is a lot on the traveling secretary to handle all that. And it's one of the hidden parts of baseball that's kind of fun that you know, there's all these moving parts. I remember last year when Matt Beatty got called up, he had been in AAA. And the Oklahoma City Dodgers actually came. They were playing the Salt Lake Bees in Salt Lake. And so I was at the game in Salt Lake, and I had texted Beatty saying, hey, I'd love to say hi or whatever. And he didn't get back to me for a couple hours, which is kind of weird. And then the word came out on Twitter that Beatty had been called up because somebody had gone on the injured list. And then right after that word came out, then he replied to my text, said, sorry, I couldn't respond to you because it was top secret and I wasn't allowed to say anything. But he had actually known for a couple of days. And Pepio mentioned, even though we didn't find out until Tuesday afternoon that Pepio was starting Tuesday night, Pepio said after the game that he found out Sunday late morning. And so he flew out on Sunday evening and had all of Monday, you know, so it was a lot less rushed than it felt like to us. And so it's kind of fun to see about those behind the scenes things. I also asked Pepio because he's married and a lot of minor leaguers aren't, but Pepio is married. And so I asked him, does she just fly with you? And he said, if she happens to be with him at the time, then she'll fly with him, or she'll fly from wherever she is and meet up with him at Dodger Stadium to watch the game. So yeah, I appreciate the question, Chris. And I really appreciate Ryan Pepio getting back to me. You know, he started yesterday, so he's, you know, he had the day off. He's just kind of chilling. And I it was really nice of him. He was very open with answers and stuff. He did tell me one or two things that afterwards he said, yeah, maybe don't talk about those things. So I don't know if those things are supposed to be public knowledge. Kind of like how Clayton Kershaw gave away their 50-50 replay strategy. Yeah, so other than that, I appreciate him being open with that.
Yeah, that was good. And you know, it's always an interesting thing. You think of some of this stuff. I think the funniest one was Doug Mirabelli getting a police escort to a game before because the Red Sox had just got him and needed somebody to catch Tim Wakefield that night. And he was one of those guys that could do that. So I'm sure there's a bunch of interesting, crazy stories that you can get into about somebody getting called up, acquired, or stuff like that. But yeah. Moving on, Dodgers have now played through 81 games. They are 52-29. They are on pace for 104 wins because it's easy to do the math. You just double everything right now. But that also makes it easy to kind of look at some numbers and see what some Dodgers are on pace for. You will start with Freddie Freeman. He's on pace for 50 doubles and 100 RBIs, 20 home runs. You got Trey Turner on pace for over 100 RBI, on pace for 118 RBI, on pace for 40 doubles. Justin Turner's on pace for 40 doubles. You got Mookie Betts, the only player on pace for over 30 home runs right now, on pace for 36. And then second place on the Dodgers is Will Smith, who's on pace for 26. We can go through a bunch of these different numbers, but just anything stand out to you or anything from the first half, or I don't know, Jeff, we kind of have free reign here. It's our show.
Yeah, it is our show. Trey Turner is also on pace for 198 hits, which would be interesting. 200 hits used to be a lot more common than it is these days. Trey Turner has never had 200 hits in a season. He's maxed out at 195 last year. That was his career high. So on pace for 198, it'd be nice to see him, you know, and last year he batted 328. If he bats 328 this year, he'll get to 200 hits because last year he missed time with on the COVID IL. And so, and maybe one other injury too. I know last year he only played 148 games last year. This year he's on pace. That's another on pace. He's on pace to play 162 games, as is Freddie Freeman. Chris Taylor, his broken foot may have saved him from a 200 strikeout season because right now he's on pace for 202, but missing a couple weeks could keep him in the 190s on strikeouts, or maybe making more contact will keep him in the 170s. Right now, 170 would feel like a huge, huge accomplishment for him. Belly's on pace for 180 strikeouts. Trey's on pace for 32 stolen bases, and Bellinger's on pace for 18. Bellinger could – he's on pace for 22 homers and 18 stolen bases. He could have a 2020 season, despite it obviously being a very down season for him. Yeah, I mean, a ton of who's on – Eddie Alvarez is on pace for 2 sacrifice bunts, as are the Dodgers. So, yeah, it's – you know, this midway point's fun, and it's a little more realistic than after the opening day and you say – oh, somebody's on pace for 324 home runs because they hit 2 home runs on opening day. But yeah, it's a little bit more realistic. Interestingly, the Dodgers are actually have a worse record than they did at the 81 game mark last year. They were better in the second half last year. And it seems at least possible and maybe even really likely that the Dodgers will be better in the second half this season because you know, everybody agrees they haven't clicked. They haven't really gotten hot. They haven't had a huge hot streak. And so it's easy to see them. You know, of course, they do play the Padres and Giants more in the second half, and that could go either way. You know, if the Padres and Giants kind of tank, the Giants have been tanking. They did finally win a game today, but they've been struggling. The Padres had their major collapse last season, and it could be, if they get demoralized, it could be a fun way to bump up that record. So, you know, Dodgers, like you said, on pace for 104 wins, and I don't think any number between 99 and 110 would surprise me. I think anything in there would seems like in the realm of possibility.
Yeah, you look at the schedule coming up, and they play the Cardinals before the break, but they have the Cubs and Angels who aren't not playing very well. Cubs have some young talent that's been showing out, but that doesn't necessarily translate to wins. Angels have Otani and Mike Trout, but not much else going on for them. So it's that they come out of the break and they play the Giants. They play the Cardinals. They play the Giants again. You know, they play, they don't play too many winning teams for the next few weeks or the next, 20, 25 games. So they can really take advantage. I guess the Giants are a winning team, but not playing well. So they could take advantage there. And then the other part too is, Max Muncy was on the IL, but didn't miss too much time, just ended up missing the 2 weeks. If you said the Dodgers would be on pace for 104 wins and Max Muncy and Justin Turner are on pace for a combined 30 home runs, I think you would say, well, something went wrong with Turner and Muncy, but something went right and they're playing well along it. That something that went right was the starting pitching. And even the starting pitching, we've talked about Tony Gonsolin maybe being – going to regress slightly. Tyler Anderson could regress slightly. Guys could regress a little bit, even Pepio and Mitch White if they continue to make starts. But the offense can regress the other way and put up more runs, and the Dodgers can still be on pace to win over 100 games. So it's going to be an interesting second half. I do think it's going to be a lot different than last year. I don't think they'll be fighting for till the final day for the division. But now with buys in both for the top two teams, if they're anywhere near that or in jeopardy of not being that, I think they would be playing all the way in order to guarantee that bye.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Muncy does seem to be figuring things out a little bit. And so even if he doesn't turn into the Max Muncy we've known the last few years, if he can be somewhere between what he's been so far this year and that guy, that helps them a lot. Justin Turner has been turning things on. Cody Bellinger, like we talked about, if he does figure this out and start hitting better, all these things, there's plenty of room. And even Mookie and Freeman and Trey have all had their struggles, in this first half. And so if they can be more consistent, there's a lot of room for at least a little bit of improvement over the second half.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. Second half starts tonight with the Cubs, 4-game series with the Cubs coming up. That's what we're going to talk about tomorrow. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen of the day every day. Check out Locked On MLB Prospects with host Lindsey Crosby. He's a prospect encyclopedia, and he's going deep on the MLB stars to tomorrow. Check him out on YouTube. I know he's close to 1,000 subscribers. So if you guys want to hear about the future of baseball, go check it out and subscribe on YouTube to Locked On MLB Prospects. That's going to do it for us. Thank you all for listening. Make sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and wherever you get podcasts. Make sure to follow us on social media, Twitter and Instagram at Locked On Dodgers. Jeff is on Twitter at Snydog. I'm at Vince Amperio. DMs are open on all those accounts if you need to get a hold of us. You can also get a hold of us via email, lockedondodgers@gmail.com, or via voicemail text at 323-863-5625. We're here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be with us. When you get in your car, if you're at home, tell your smart device, play podcast, Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. Have a good one.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.